welcome to this Sunday's episode of Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, proudly sponsored by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. We got a lot to bite off today, Dave. We're going to talk scouting trips. There will probably be a segment of gripes about care for our public lands.
Yes.
We've got some sheep news going on, Southern Nevada stuff. And then I am now officially in the poorhouse. I recently picked up a cab over.
Yes.
For my truck, but we can talk about maybe base camp setup stuff, things we like to have out there. And then I also want to touch on Governor Lombardo. Kudos to Governor Lombardo. He spoke out and basically took Amaday to task on how that land transfer thing was slipped in to the budget deal. So anyway, we'll talk about all of that coming up.
And rangefinders. Yeah, because the technology committee.
That's right.
Met the other day and they discussed rangefinders on and off equipment, as well as emerging technology in trail cameras and stuff.
Are you talking rangefinders like those bow sights and stuff?
Correct. Well, that's one component.
Okay.
That's one component. And then the rest is actual, like the handheld rangefinders.
Like what we use to click targets and stuff?
Correct. Those, as well as the new ones that are on your rifle scopes.
Yes.
As well as the ones, the Garmin and the, there's two companies that make them for archery. Garmin and
I think Trophy Ridge don't they?
Is it them? It could be. I thought it was them or, anyway, Maven
could be
or
somebody else.
So, but yeah.
Well, shoot, I'll be interested to hear the rangefinder thing. Let's start with an article that popped on the Outdoor Wire, came into my email yesterday, but essentially, it looks like Endow was able to direct $500,000, $500,000 from the Heritage Fund towards emergency water hauls and the transplant of desert bighorn sheep from the affected ranges. This is that extreme drought going on.
Yeah.
In Southern Nevada. In addition, I'm going to name these organizations because holy smokes, did they step up. Kuyu, the camo company, and the GSCO. And the Wild Sheep Foundation, they were able to pledge $250,000 in support of Endow's actions. Fraternity of the Desert Bighorn, Nevada Bighorns Unlimited, each pledged another $100,000. So it's over $1 million at this point to address the water and habitat carrying capacity emergency. And then here's the thing that really caught my eye or made me sit up a little straighter. They're going to move roughly 150 sheep, majority being sent to the Cortez and Tobin Mountains, and the remainder going to support the nursery herd in Utah. What have you heard about that? I mean, I knew we'd covered it on the show. I mean, this nursery herd in Utah, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
So that's like an ongoing deal where they actually use a herd in Utah as like brood stock for Nevada bighorns or
what?
Well,
not just Nevada, but for other states as well. But it's just a herd that is very stable, very strong.
Okay.
And the one thing you really want to try to avoid is genetic bottlenecking.
So it's a
good diverse herd.
Okay.
And I didn't realize they were pulling from that herd, which I would have assumed they would have, because that's kind of like the meat and potatoes of it all. But this has been in the plans for probably going on 2 or so years since all of this water issue. Like last year, spent hundreds of thousands of dollars with helicopters and filling guzzlers, or at least dropping water on the guzzler, the platforms. And so what they're trying to do now is get ahead of that, because you know, we didn't have a fantastic winter. We had an average winter, which is nice to see. Thing is Nevada needs like 3 exceptional winters to make up for the water issue across our state. So this is hopefully going to get ahead of that a little bit, get the water back out there, and then get some of these herds back to a nice, stable, and not declining herd due to starvation and lack of water.
No, I got to ask, because I just don't pay attention enough. I think back the last winter, notwithstanding, the 2 previous up here in Northern Nevada were exceptional.
Yeah.
Did they not get that down there?
No, they didn't.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Like on my hunt in 22 for my desert, the water situation was tough.
No kidding.
It was tough. You know, we found some really good sheep they seemed to be in pretty decent condition, but as we got closer to some of these herds, we noticed a lot of nose dripping and other issues. And then a lot of the water sources, by the time August, September came along, those water sources were bone dry. You know, some of these springs that we're used to seeing flowing and pooling throughout the year were now just really small tire-sized mud holes.
Gotcha. And I know when you guys were out there on that hunt, you actually had some of those monsoons come through.
Yeah, we had that Pacific monsoon that came through because we were actually, Pat and I were coming home from an elk hunt in Arizona. We were coming through and we thought, well, hey, man, why don't we just stop in my area right here because it's right off the highway. Let's stop for the night and do some scouting and everything. Well, as we're coming through, we hit that monsoon rain.
Water.
Oh, it was nuts. We hit that perfectly and we couldn't see 3 car lengths in front of our truck. It was raining so hard.
The problem is we always take these little anecdotal samples like, oh, well, I was there when it was monsooning. But you need like months of that.
Well, yeah, you need
to
a lot
really
more.
Refill.
Exactly. Yeah, you need a lot more and spread over a period of time. You know, it's nice getting 9 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. To some degree, it's nice. It causes a great deal of flooding. But you lose a lot of that water to the flooding. You're not giving that water a chance to be absorbed into the earth and then filling those aquifers or those underground springs that end up coming out of the rocks when you're like, hey, look, there's water coming out of these rocks here at this spring head. You're not allowing it to do that. So you're getting, 3, 4, 5 inches of saturated soil, and then the rest of the water's just rolling off the mountain into a drainage ditch. Or to the highway, to the edge of the highways or something, and it's not actually getting utilized where it needs. So if it spread itself out over, say, a 2-month period of a little bit of rain here, a little bit of rain there, a little bit of rain, that's the stuff that, that actually, re-energizes our springs and such.
Yeah, I'll tell you, for listeners too, I don't know why I find this stuff fascinating, but if you go to YouTube and you look at some of those tests they've done, they'll do a little like drip, like raindrops of water on like sandy desert soil.
Right.
And it does, it soaks in. But if they dump like a whole cup at once, it's just whoosh, gone and doesn't penetrate.
It doesn't penetrate. Yeah. Like that's what that monsoonal rain did. Granted, it filled 2 of the guzzlers like plumb full because, the water hits the aprons and those aprons don't penetrate. They just flow straight into the tanks. So that was a benefit. But in regards to re-energizing the springs in the area, it just
didn't do
work.
Anything.
Yeah, it just didn't do anything.
Man, it makes me happy to see them getting out in front of this. I didn't know it was that big of an issue. Here's one question I'd have for you. I'll put you on the spot. They're relocating, it said, a majority of those 150 sheep. They're going to take some to the nursery herd in Utah, and then the others are going to go to the Cortez Range and then the Tobins. It sounds like the Tobins may be coming back because I know there was the year my dad had a tag in there, there was the big, we couldn't find sheep.
Yeah.
There was a huge pneumonia die-off.
Right.
So I take that, when I read that, I take that to mean the Tobins maybe not ready for application or open hunting again.
Yeah, not yet.
But at least it seems like it's on the decline, the pneumonia thing.
That's been kind of controlled in a sense because most of the population died from the pneumonia, and now they're just repopulating it and trying to get that population back up to a standard.
Here's another question for you. It was California bighorns in there. So it sounds like if these are coming out of Southern Nevada, this is going to be desert bighorns.
Yeah.
So are they just giving up on the California bighorn thing? Or are they, what's the...
I don't know that.
You don't know that one?
You got me on that. Yeah, I don't know that one. Yeah.
Finally stumped David Catalano.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was California's and now it's, now they're going to be putting in desert. So I'll just have to look into that one.
You got a chance because we have got to go to break here. When we come back, we'll dive into a scouting trip report, a base camp analysis by David and Henry, and then we'll wrap up with some gripes that we've got. Oh no, the technology thing.
Yeah.
We'll hit technology as well. So do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we are back back on Nevada Backcountry. If you miss a segment of the show, you can always go to Apple Podcasts, search for Nevada Backcountry, or you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, and everything is there. All misogyny jokes aside, I forgot about Memorial Day. I forgot about Mother's Day. I always forget about the holidays when we do this show because we sit down, we start talking, or we're pre-recording, and it's a couple days away. So I'm not going to forget about this one. And of course, it's two men doing the show.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to forget about Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to everyone out there. Hey, hopefully you're sitting back, surrounded by family right now, drinking a cocktail, listening to Dave and I. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for sponsoring the show. Now, covered a holiday for once on
you
the show.
You did, even though, you know, Cynthia and Gina are going to be sitting there listening to the show going, oh, isn't that nice that you remembered your holiday?
Yep.
Yeah, and forgot ours. Isn't that just great?
Mother's Day, Memorial, I screw that up all the time. But hey, happy Father's Day to all of you dads out there listening. Let's go scouting trip.
Yeah, okay. Or all of you dads out there that don't realize that you're actually a dad.
Oh, yeah.
There's those. You know?
I know that no one that listens to Nevada Backcountry would be that kind of degenerate. Hey, kudos all to all you upstanding citizens that listen to this show.
Yeah.
But scouting, Dave.
Yes.
You just got back. You were out in your bull elk unit.
Yeah. We initially went out there because, you know, right now there's just very little growth on bulls. You're not going to be able to determine anything besides body condition. And the animals we did see, they looked fantastic. And, you know, you can always tell the mature and the younger ones by the coloration.
Right.
So we found, one mature bull a way out. But it was great. My main focus was to get out there and check some of the water sources and several of the springs that I'm very aware of. And it was good and bad. Okay. Dismal in the sense that two of the wallows that I'd backpacked into years prior are bone dry. Several of the springs are bone dry already. There's another handful of them that will be dry by probably the end of July or probably by the time July starts. And then there were a few that were just pumping, absolutely pumping.
So what's the difference?
It could be anything. It could be the aquifer that's feeding it.
Okay.
How it does receive its water. You know, some takes a lot longer for the water to get down to it. Depends on the depth of that particular aquifer. I mean, there's a lot of elements that we don't see because it's all underground. Yeah. Like one of the springs we went to that was just kicking butt. You know, there was a series of rocks and the water was just like a water fountain. Just the water was just coming straight out of the ground right there.
Yeah.
And then pooling.
Like a geyser.
It was just pumping. And it was freezing cold water and crystal clear, and there was just, it was littered with elk. Tracks and fresh poop all over the place. It was awesome.
Initial trip made, you kind of checked off what you wanted to check off on this trip.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the hunt?
You know, right now I'm feeling really good about it. I do know that they're probably going to be fairly tight to water.
Yeah.
Especially if we don't have any good rainstorms from now until then, you know, if it's really minimal, they're going to be pretty tied, especially seeing what we saw on that trip. We're going to head back out. There's a whole nother mountain range that we're going to go and investigate that has quite a few really nice springs on it, or it did.
Yeah.
And I want to go check those out, kind of glassed them from a distance on the way out of the range.
Okay.
So we'll hit that one next time and then start making a game plan on where to put the adventure trailer to park it and get ready for the actual hunt.
Okay. Now, yeah, I know we had an average winter out here in Western Nevada. Your tag is out in Eastern Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
How have their winters been?
Their winter this last year was below average.
Below average.
Where in the years past when, you know, generally on the west side, if we have a really poor winter, it seems like it always goes around us, but then hammers central and eastern. And, you know, we've had pretty good winters where it's been sitting, coming across and hitting, you know, Reno area and northern Washoe and then kind of petering up into Oregon and Idaho, but missing Elko and Ely and, you know, all of that area.
Okay.
So, and that's kind of what it did this last year. And looking at some of the water reports and snow reports for the eastern part of the state, it looked like they were sitting in the 80% range.
Gotcha.
For the year.
Gotcha.
You know, depending on where you're looking. So, I mean, that's going to be reflected. I mean, the cool thing was, is some of these areas, they did a bunch of chaining in part of the area that I'm hunting.
They did it
like 3 years ago. So hiking up into some of those chain locations, the green up is looking pretty good.
I bet. Yeah.
So, and that's huge. They elk love that fresh, supposed to kind of like simulate a burn.
Right.
Now you're getting sunlight to the soil, which hasn't had it for years. And now
stuff's growing. Got some,
yeah. Will it still be there in August? Will they have already eaten it all out? I don't know. But right now it's something I'll be focusing on.
Absolutely.
And glassing for sure. But it was a great trip. Pat and I had an awesome time. We covered a lot of ground. Pat did great, as he usually does. He's a trooper till you call him 2 days later and he's, you know, his back is killing him or something. But Pat, you're a stud. Thank you for coming out, man. Always welcome.
And it's funny because I was road tripping at the same time.
Yeah.
And I was like in and out of pockets of service. So it's like I would get messages on our group thing, but they were like all out of order. So I would do my dumb bit and try to make a joke about something. And then like the next morning I'd wake up and they'd be in the right order. And I'd be like, oh, well, yeah, everybody just looked at this and was like, what, is Henry drunk? What is he talking about?
Exactly,
yeah. I'm like, well, that didn't make any sense. But
yeah.
I was jealous. You guys sent some pictures. I'm happy that you found some elk. Yeah, I got to get my butt in gear and get out there with you guys. You know, I got to make a scouting trip up into my unit to check the water situation here shortly as well.
Yeah.
But I'd love some feedback from people listening. What you guys and gals are seeing out there on your scouting trips, not critter-wise, but just water-wise.
Yeah, and habitat condition.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that I could be sitting here in the Truckee Meadows and go, man, there's water everywhere. This is perfect.
Yeah.
And then you have a trip like you had, or I read an article like I read about the sheep situation and go, yeah, that's not everywhere.
Yeah, because, you know, state of Nevada is just so diverse. I mean, you've got that varying climate.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, we may be getting a great winter here, a tons of rain or something, and the southern part or that northeastern corner is just dry as a bone.
Yeah.
But we don't really think of that. And a lot of folks that do go out and scout, you talk to a lot of them, and their only focus is looking for the animals. And my first scouting trips, my first one or two are always, you know, it's cool if we see animals, which would be sweet. You know, it's always nice to see them. But my focus is always checking the habitat. Like, what's the condition of our habitat? Now, these areas in Nevada are huge. I mean, you go to the Midwest for, like, whitetail deer hunting, and your hunting area in some of those states where they have designated zones, it's like 3 miles by 3 miles.
Yeah. I mean, it's like downtown Virginia City.
Right.
That's your
hunting unit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, here in Nevada, it's like, oh, yeah, what's your hunting unit? Oh, it's from Eureka to Tonopah. And then, you know, and you're just like, what? That's, you know, 60 mile. Yeah. And then it's 100 miles wide.
Yeah.
You got to figure that out. Like, animals can move a lot of places. So I always check habitat. Like, what's greening up?
That's a great call.
Yeah. Like, what's greening up? How's the water condition look? Is it going to still be this way in a week, 3-4 weeks out, you know, that kind of stuff? And then I start to focus as I get closer to the hunt. Then I start focusing on where the animals are and where are they focusing, like what canyons and such and what bowls. And then I go and kill something.
Yeah.
Go and ventilate it.
All nonchalant. Yeah. Then so, I go and chase things is what I would say.
Yeah.
But no, that's a great point, you know, and I'm guilty of the former as well, like where I go out and if I happen to see a herd of elk or whatever, I immediately am glued to that, like, oh, okay, cool. And yeah, I need to take a step back and go, well, I still got 2 months to kill.
Right.
So why don't I figure out, you know, whether or not what the water situation is in this unit. And full disclosure, you have been in that unit a good bit.
Oh, yeah.
Where your tag is. So you knew where to go, where to look for water and everything.
Yeah, and vegetation. Like, what are they feeding on? Because like you were saying, you got 2 months till your hunt. Okay,
right.
That's super cool. And you just saw a big old herd of elk sitting in that particular bowl.
Right.
In 2 months, that bowl could be dry as a bone. There are four ridges over, and you're spending 3 days hunting that bowl thinking, well, man, I saw them here earlier. Well, what they were feeding on is dried up and gone now. they've boogered out, man.
And there's only a handful of units that I know on that level where it's like, okay, early season they'll be here, mid season they'll be here, late rifle they'll be here. There's only a handful of units I know like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. There are those units where it's like, I've only ever been in there for archery hunts.
Right.
And I generally know where they are. But if someone got in touch and said, hey, I drew the any legal weapon tag in that unit, I'd have to give them that clip. Like, hey, I don't know. I've never been in there in November.
Yeah. I've been in that situation where I've hunted the same area for archery deer, and then I've gone on a hunt with a buddy for any legal weapon.
They were all over here in August.
Right, exactly. In August, man, it was all over right here. And like, oh, dude, we're 9 miles further south.
Yeah.
That's where we hunt for any legal weapon. And you'll go to the area where you hunted for archery, and you're seeing like nothing, like scraps and pieces. Like, here's a fork and horn, and oh, there's a doe. And you're like, what the? But yeah, they move.
I've been on the back
winter
end
ground,
of that.
Yeah, summering ground, wintering ground.
Yep.
You know, there are all kinds of stuff. You're like, oh yeah, we're 4 months later.
Yeah. I've gotten pictures of a giant buck, and oh yeah, there were at least four in there this big and da-da-da, and it was a hard-horned buck.
Oh, nice.
And I asked, I said, well, when were you in there? Because they were kind of going, oh, I'd go up in here, I'd check this, and it was rifle.
Oh.
Is when they killed it. And I was like, yeah, but I got an archery tag. And I did the thing. I checked it regardless, but yeah, not a deer in there.
Yeah.
And then I found them elsewhere. Yeah. But
I do have to say, on this scouting trip, we did come across one older buck, because you could tell just by his body posture.
A big Roman nose.
Big old Roman nose, all scarred up top and everything. I'm not going to say where my tag is, but
yeah.
if folks are out there, he is going to be a smoker. He is.
How much growth's he got on him?
So he's starting to branch, but he lays straight out.
He comes out and flat off the head.
He comes flat off the head, and he is just about the width of his ears right now where he's starting to branch out. The thing is his mass, it was like two Coke cans.
Whoa, buddy.
And he just stood there and just stared at us between the trees, and he's going to be a toad.
Well, that eastern part of the state can pump out some good bucks for sure. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping I just get to see him when we're out there. Yeah, when we're out there for the bull hunt, just to see him would be like, where's a 190 plus?
Yeah.
Be sweet.
Well, awesome. Do not go anywhere. We got more coming up on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, thanks to Shooting Performance Institute down there in Gardnerville. Make sure you go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com, check out the course schedule, and treat that like part of your preseason prep. If you have one of those any legal weapon tags, make sure you are as dialed as possible before you hit the woods this fall. We left off, kind of went over your scouting stuff, your trip. Let's switch gears for a minute, Dave. I was interested when you were talking about this. It was a commission meeting, correct?
The Emerging Technology Committee meeting, which is a subgroup of the Wildlife Commission.
Okay, so they met to discuss some of the new rangefinder technology?
Yeah, rangefinders and just the new emerging technology out there right now, and how they should, as a committee, then bringing it to CABS and Wildlife Commission, how they should address these things prior to them being put out there in mass.
So how do they go about that as far as what they purchase all the new latest greatest and have
No, they don't go to that far. They're not like a Consumer's Reports, which that'd be pretty cool if they were, because I'd want to be on that committee. They've requested the meeting was last Monday, and they went over some of the stuff that's on the commission for this weekend that we're talking right now in Elko. So they went over some of that, and then they discussed moving forward.
Okay.
And their information is gathered on requests to the Department of Wildlife, law enforcement, and or division that's related to that particular topic to gather more information and get deeper in the weeds and provide a presentation on it. With rangefinders, you know, as we all know, you know, Garmin makes a rangefinder, which is part of a compound bow sight. You know,
it's
you draw back
zero with an X or
something like that. Yeah. I'm not fond of them, but you come to full draw and there's generally a little pad or a button that's on your riser, and you just kind of tap it and it will range the animal for you and tell you on the side of the sight, you know, like 42 yards. So then you look at your pinch, like, that's my 40. Okay, here we go. Let's do this and whack-a-doo. Okay, some of the new sights coming out actually don't have pins.
Right, it just puts a dot where
it
you should.
It puts a dot, exactly. So you have like a little glass face or a screen, and as you click the animal, it just automatically places a dot on the screen, and then you put the dot on the animal, and then wing whack-a-doo.
Yeah.
And so there's discussion about that. Like, how legal is that? Is that, are they as good as they say? Because I know some of the earlier versions of these sites had some pretty good malfunctions. They didn't work as designed. Okay. But, you know, we're into generation 3 and 4.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got something like that, and if anyone ever saw a bow in motion after a shot in slow motion, there is a stupid, crazy amount of vibration.
Oh, yeah.
So you figure that's going through all the mechanics on that particular sight, and it's going to rattle it, and eventually it's going to malfunction.
Yeah, I'll nerd out for a second, but that's very similar to, I believe it was the Burris Veracity or something. Burris made a rifle scope years, and I think they still do, but years and years and years ago, where it was the same exact thing. You put it on the animal, the rifle scope, it's just like this, you know, it's got crosshairs on there, but then you hit a button on top, it ranges it and puts a red dot where you need to center on the animal.
Yeah.
But I know that the recoil impulse on a rifle was very easy for them to build for. It's one direction, and even though it's a much stronger recoil impulse, the thing that makes it tough for optics manufacturers is when you get into that harmonic vibration where now you're having motion back and forth.
And up and down,
And up and down, and you've got to account for all that oscillation going on. So, I mean, it's interesting to me that they're doing this stuff right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see there being some issues with the accuracy, I'll call it.
Yeah, exactly. And they're talking about, you know, are they accurate enough to, for a good humane kill? Well, yeah, I mean, there's some benefits to it because, you know, when you're at full draw, you come to draw on an animal and it starts to walk.
That happened to me 2 years ago.
Yeah,
yep.
So it walks along and you're at full draw kind of just pacing with the animal, and then it finally stops again and you kind of look at the animal and you're like, yeah, I don't think he's any further out. I think he's still 42 yards. Boom, you shoot, take a shot, and you shoot him in the back, or you shoot him in the low in the
or you
chest,
miss,
or
miss
you miss
completely.
Entirely.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing is wounding them.
Right.
And you're like, oh, man, he must have moved closer instead, you know, or farther. Well, where these sights, you could just hit the button again, and it'll tell you, oh, it's not 42, he's now 46.
Right.
And so there's benefits. And it'll move that thing. So there are benefits to it. It's just, you know, they're going through those, and then there's new systems out or coming out, which are blowing my mind. I was reading up on some of these that primarily in some of the binoculars and everything, which you'll have an app for it. And so you'll range your animal, you'll shoot your animal, and then it will create a map on your phone of what you ranged and how to get there.
Yeah.
And then it'll create a map to track your animal.
Oh, to track it or you'll see where it was.
To track yourself to the location where you shot the animal. Because how many times have we all been in the situation where, you know, you shoot your animal, it runs off into the trees, and then you're like, okay, let's give it a few minutes. Okay, cool. He was standing in front of that one bush right there that's got the little pointed top, blah, blah, blah. And you walk out there, and then you're like, oh, crud. Every bush has got is tall with a top like that.
Yep.
And then you're telling your buddy, hey, walk back to where I shot it from. And then let me. So next thing you know, you're spending an hour just trying to figure out where was the deer standing when I shot it. This kind of alleviates that. So there's legality about that. Like, oh, you know. So they're asking Department of Wildlife to provide pros and cons presentation on emerging technology in relation to how other Western states are addressing these same issues.
Okay, I will tell you right now, in fact, we talked about it on the show before that Canada moose hunt. My dad has those SIG Kilo 10s or whatever, the binos.
Yeah, the rangefinder binoculars,
Well, you can do that with those.
Oh, really?
He's got the app, and it's got a map on there. And now, I don't think either of us thought to use it like that. We were more like, hey, okay, how do we get to that P peak or whatever, you know, he'd range and click the peak, and then you can pull up the app and it'll drop a pin where that range was.
Where you hit the range.
That
just blows my mind how it does that.
Same here.
So freaky.
But so those are out and widely accessible on the consumer market. I don't think we ever thought about the implications or the usage for like what you're talking about. But now that you say it out loud, I'm like, man, that would be perfect. If, especially on a rifle hunt where it's like, oh yeah, hey, range him, click, he's right there. Okay, the app's got a pin. He was standing right there when we shot him.
Right, exactly. And you can walk to it to see if there's blood, see what the what is. With rifle, like you said, that would be a little tougher because archery, okay, you have to walk 80 yards at the most.
Exactly. Yeah.
With a rifle, you're like, hey, you know, you're on walkie talkies.
He was 340 yards down that way.
Exactly. Yeah. I took the shot at 610, you know, hey, can you walk back up the top of that mountain where I'm not
doing that. Yeah. I run into that all the time. Not big game hunting, but with chucker.
Oh my God.
Where you shoot one and it goes down and you're like, well, it was right next to this bitter, or was it that bitter, bro?
Oh my God.
Oh, it's somewhere in here.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I'm like, I'm so good at this. Yeah, no, he's right next to that one tree. There's that little bush that's flowering. Yeah, that's where it is.
Yeah.
You go down there, you're like, oh, dude,
there's nothing here.
There's 15 bushes flowering here.
And especially if a big covey spit out and then your dog's on every scent.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, knucklehead, I'm out over there. Dead bird, somewhere. Yeah. Find it. Yeah,
exactly.
So what would be, and this is a pure hypothetical, because I look at technology like that, and even though I personally, I don't have it, I still look at it as like, this makes for a more ethical, and not ethical, but a more humane hunt overall. If you can have the ability to drop a pin right where the animal was standing when you took the shot.
Yeah.
And then I would look at that and go, hey, that increases recovery rates.
Right.
Like, this is a good thing for all of us collectively.
No, I agree with you. I agree with that statement completely. I think that there are some really good benefits to it.
What would be the cons in that you could think of? Spitball with me.
I really can't think of any cons, but I'm sure there's plenty of folks out there that like to circumvent the system and do shady stuff that could probably figure out how they could use that in an improper way. And I think that's some of the stuff that they're asking for the Department of Wildlife to look into. Like, what are the pros and cons of this? What are the good things? And how can this be used in an improper way in a hunting situation?
Yeah, I could see maybe them saying like, well, it could lead to increased rates of poaching, or they shoot something, they drop a pin, we'll go back and get that. But then I would go, yeah, but that doesn't prevent the people do that anyway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you could use orange flagging.
Bingo.
Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. We shot him from here and we know he's over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Orange flagging. Or you got your phone, you got Onyx Hunt. Waypoint. Beak. Yeah. Done. Move on. In regards to that, there's no difference between your phone or pinging it on a bino that also has an app on your phone.
Right.
I mean, okay. Either way, you're still going to ping. You're still going to waypoint.
Cool. I'm glad they're looking into that stuff. Unless they come down on a side I don't agree with, then boo to that. No, I'm kidding. good for them for doing that. When we come back, let's soapbox a little. I want to cover the Lombardo statement on Amaday, so we'll get that. And then we'll talk a little bit about your mom not living out in the woods to pick up after you and why you should be a decent human being.
Exactly.
It's coming up on Nevada Backcountry. Don't go anywhere. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this glorious Father's Day. Look, I shouldn't say this kind of stuff, but I'm going to. I hope you are not listening right now. I hope you are outside playing with your kids for all you dads.
Well, hopefully they're carrying a speaker.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so I hope you are streaming us right now.
Streaming us on your Bluetooth speaker while you're outside sitting in the chair and having yourself a Father's Day cocktail.
Yeah,
a Paterita or something.
A Paterita.
We're going to break open a bottle of bourbon here in a second.
Amen. If you are one of those ones out in the middle of nowhere with your kids having some fun right now, you can always stream the show. I plug it all the time so you can get caught up. All right, before we run out of time on this last segment here, I wanted to bring up a recent article in the Nevada Independent, basically talking about this whole land transfer thing. And I gave kudos to Lombardo because he did take Amadei to task on how they went about that whole land transfer deal and slipping it in. What was it, the House Appropriations Bill, the budget thing?
Yeah, the budget bill.
So I'll give Lombardo some credit there, but I want to plug, we don't have time to go fully in depth on this situation. And I hate that Cortez Masto is trying to frame this as an affordable housing thing.
Yeah.
That they need more land to build affordable housing.
Yeah, it makes no sense because
chunks
of
the rubies?
Yeah, some
in
of
the rubies.
Yeah, some of this land is in central Nevada. Yeah. Like,
get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
That's like 100% for someone reading the New York Times, sitting in their little brownstone in Brooklyn going, yeah, man, this Cortez Masto, she sure does care about the affordable housing. It's like, yo, go spend some time in these places, man.
Yeah.
There ain't nothing out there.
No.
Anyway, there's my gripe about that. But I will say the Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Project, TRCP, you can go to their website. In fact, I was just emailing with Marcel, the regional director, earlier. They've got a really good analysis and they've released a statement on this kind of stuff, the public lands transfer. So I would urge you to go to trcp.org and check out their stance on it. And they give kudos to Lombardo as well. Let's gripe about.
Real quick.
No,
real quick.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Real quick. So as of right now, it's dead.
Dead.
It's
dead in the
dead,
water.
But they're trying to revive it.
Yep.
Within another bill.
Correct.
Because the Trump administration caught it before the budget bill was passed.
Yep.
And ripped it out because they realized that it's absolute garbage.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
So right now it's dead.
There is a push on the D side of the aisle in Nevada to get this back in something and start transferring these lands to private holders.
Yeah. But isn't it only private holders that are going to develop it?
Correct.
Yeah. So how fair is that? That doesn't make, that's not fair at all that they're not allowing people or organizations like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation,
Bingo.
Wild Sheep Foundation, on and on and on, Chuckers, them to purchase fat chunks of this land and just leave it alone for wildlife and for recreation and for the betterment of Nevada, our wildlife.
For the benefit of sportsmen and women and outdoorsmen and women.
And and recreationalists that want to enjoy a natural environment.
Correct.
They're only going to provide this land to people who want to bulldoze it and turn it into something else.
Energy exploration,
wind
storage,
energy, storage,
whatever.
Buildings, whatever it is. They want it to be diced up and built on.
And I hate that. I don't know what that is, but it lights a fire of rage deep within me when I see these catchphrases like affordable housing, because let's get something straight right now. There's no such thing as affordable housing. There is government subsidized housing, and then there's everything else.
Correct.
And that's what it is. So quit calling it affordable housing.
Yeah.
It's government subsidized housing. And when I look at some of these lands that they're proposing, it's like, you got to be freaking kidding me, man. Ain't nobody moving out to...
Between Fallon and Austin.
Yeah. Pick a range out there.
Yeah, pick a range out there that they're selling 10,000 acres. Like, okay, good good commute.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole thing's a crock in my book. So there, what else before we move
that
on?
That was it. I was just like, I'm glad it's at the dead point right now, but it'll fire back up.
Oh, yeah. They'll go after it again. But like I said, Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Project, trcp.org. Make sure you check out their statement and everybody that has partnered with them to essentially fight against this. Go do that. And there's petitions. You can send letters. I highly encourage people to get involved because this affects all of us.
Yeah. And we'll keep you posted as well as things start coming across the table.
Now let's do another gripe, Dave.
Yes. Yes. So on my scout over the last 4 days we were out there, I generally got to the mountains to relax, enjoy, have a peaceful, wonderful time, kind of reboot. I just got so freaking fired up because we filled up 4 garbage bags.
Contractor bags.
Yeah. Of garbage that we found on our public lands and our landscape. I'm just kind of spitballing this out there. I'm assuming they're like the 20 to 30 year old folks because the amount of energy drink cans that we picked up was stupid. I mean, these dudes got to have kidney stones the size of a car tire. I mean, geez, oh, Murphy. The plastic water bottles for days, tons of beer cans, found tarps. We found a 3D Target out there. We found...
Oh, yeah, didn't you? You guys thought you found a dead animal.
Yeah, we thought we thought we had a dead animal on the side of the mountain.
Glassed it up
Yeah, we
something?
Glassed it up. We, you know, Pat's like, check that out. What is that? I'm like, dude, I don't know what the hell that is. Good. Well, hiked up to it. It was a 3D deer that someone just left out there.
Perfect.
It was all shot up. And so we grabbed it and threw it to the UTV. Running boards from a Silverado in the brush. It was tent stakes, old tents that were tore up. They just left them there. You know, people, you're better than this. You are so much better than this. You drove in a truck or something that can haul stuff out. So
pick it up.
Frickin' do it. There's no reason why you need to take your garbage and just throw it underneath a tree.
The remoteness of that area.
Yeah.
Look, we can all... condemn how the homeless or just bums, I'll call them bums, the bums live along the river here in Reno. You know, we can all talk about that and how terrible it is, but look, the bottom line is in the place you were, that's quote unquote outdoorsmen and women going out there and doing this.
Yeah, and easy 90% plus are all hunters.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting your general recreationalist going like, hey, let's go out in the back country of XYZ and camp.
Right.
These are remote locations that we were in and just garbage everywhere. And just like I said, just bags of them. So we picked it all up because I don't like leaving that stuff. I just can't drive past.
Kudos to you and Pat for doing that.
Yeah, it was really annoying. So people, please, it only takes a few seconds for you to pick up your garbage and throw it in the contractor bag or the garbage that you have tied to a tree or something, the truck, tailgate,
whatever.
Take your garbage out with you.
I never understood the can thing either, because it's like, what do you do? Like, fire it out the window of your truck? And that, like, why not just let it rattle around in your truck till you get back to civilization?
Yeah.
Just throw it away.
Just toss it in the bed. I don't know.
Thank you to those of you who spent your Father's Day, or if you're a single woman out there, I'm going to give out Dave's phone. No, I'm kidding. Hey, thank you for taking time out of your holiday Sunday to tune in, and good luck to all of you that have a tag this season.